And the first time I heard about the potential impact of the whole COVID shutdown on the supply chain was from Ashley Freeborn at Aspire Optical. And I started thinking, gosh, I never thought about that. And how much of my eyeglass comes from somewhere else?
A lot of it. The vast majority of it. A lot of the frames, they're made in Italy. The acetate is made usually in China, sometimes in Europe, Mazzucchelli acetate. A lot of the lens coatings and whatnot are manufactured in China as well. So it's across the board. It's a global. I mean, everything's global right now. You know, I was notified by our Oakley rep a little while ago. They're going to have issues with photochromic lenses, which are kind of like Oakley's version of the transition lens. There's going to be back orders on them throughout the end of the year. It's affecting all aspects of every industry. And
you think China's doing it on purpose? You think they're kind of snickering at us right now and going, yeah, we'll get you that order filled. Sure, we will, Ashley.
You know, I don't know. I think we don't know maybe enough about what's going on over there related to COVID. Are there shutdowns in factories? I think that the news is it's always quiet out of there.
Here's one thing I do know, and I'm curious, Senator Cramer, your position on this. We've just got to find a way to make more to I guess, China-proof our supply chain. Would you agree with that?
Well, so funny you bring that up, because the reason we were up till 3 o'clock this morning voting on things and why we're back in session this morning and going to be voting probably all day is because we have on the floor right now, and I think this is the third week it's been on the floor with us, a bill that started out being called the Endless Frontier Act. It's now something like the China Technology or Beat China Technology or something like that. So we're literally debating hundreds of amendments to a bill that is designed. The anchor sort of issue here are microchips, right? So, and our dependency on microchips in the supply chain, which are so important to everything we do. You name it, there's a microchip in it, including your automobiles. So we're trying to authorize and fund everything from the National Science Foundation to universities to DARPA, all of the intelligence agencies, and restore a high-tech supply chain in the United States, because we have become so dependent, particularly on China, who, in case you haven't noticed lately, and that, by the way, I love how nicely you said, we don't always get, you know, we don't always know what the news coming out of there is, you know, because we don't. If too much bad news comes out of China, those reporters aren't there anymore. So we're really, that's literally what we're talking about on this very day and why we're still here on a Friday to try to hammer this bill out. It's going to be an expensive bill. Surprise, surprise. The biggest hang-ups for me are going to be how we pay for it. But all that said, yes, we need to restore lots and lots of things in our supply chain from China. This is why America First made a lot of sense for 4 years.
So what would you want from your government in this case, Ashley, as someone that is an entrepreneur, someone that owns an eyewear operation and is very familiar with this industry? What could the United States of America, what could your U.S. senator do?
This is really, I feel like I'm put on the spot a little bit, but I mean, truly, I think so much needs to be produced just on this continent, and whether it's in the United States, I was born in Canada, whether it's in the United States, Canada, or Mexico, just so that we have access to all of the different parts, everything that we need, whether it's high tech or not. You know, my sprinkler guy just came and did a hookup for me, and I said, you know, I think there's two sprinkler heads out. And he goes, well, I only got two left because the supply chain there is minimal right now. And we're talking about my in-laws are going to do a deck off of their new home. And their builder talked them into just doing a concrete patio because lumber is so expensive and maintenance-free decking is just so hard to get. So because of the paint, they can't get the paint to dye the maintenance-free decking the right way out of a factory in Texas. So these are just the things that you hear about, and it's across the board. It's just prolific right now. So I think we need to be producing them on this continent or potentially in Europe, depending on what we need.
Is there something you can do easily, Senator Cramer? Take some of the COVID relief where we're just throwing out trillions by the dozen on this and say, well, let's incentivize, let's do a match, let's do something to reduce our dependence on all the things from different continents. Can we do something, do you think?
Well, there are a couple of things that come to mind right away. Ashley should be given a couple of hours on your stations every day.
Yep.
I have just learned more in the last 6 minutes from the two of you than I'm going to learn all day, by the way, listening to Sanders. I think that the trick is, how do you incentivize a free market to do the things that the global market does? Because we do like our stuff inexpensive as well. If you just set aside COVID for a minute, yeah, I think there are some things we can do. But the thing we shouldn't do is overtax our small businesses and our corporations and things like that. But we can talk a lot about it, Scott.
All right, let's do it today.
Really good discussion.
Donnie, thanks, Ashley. Appreciate it. Back with Senator Kevin Cramer on the Talk Radio Town Hall. Your questions and comments, welcome for him. Conversation with Ashley at Aspire Optical earlier. I wanted to just finish this note and tell you that they are extending their three-year anniversary celebration into June, which means you pay 50%. Your frame is half off with a complete lens purchase. Probably time for you to say, gosh, it's been 3 years, 4 years, 5 years since I've had a new pair of glasses. So the lenses probably are in need of an update anyway. And how many of us go out and get a $5,000 TV to replace one that's a 1080 because it's just not clear enough? And then we look at it through glasses that we wear every flipping day that are 6 years old. I mean, come on. Come on in. Get an eye exam. Change glasses. Let's go to it. And you can find out more about them at AspireOptical.com. Senator Cramer, anything else on the quote-unquote Endless Frontier Act? By the way, talk about typical Washington, D.C. Endless Frontier Act, who's not for that? Stop the China supply chain, who's not for that? But as typical Washington, it's got to cost how many trillion dollars right now for it to be worthwhile to the Democrats? I'm just getting so sick of this.
Yeah, well, this one's right now, Scotty, I think it's at like the last count with my calculator was $246 billion. About $52 billion of it, I believe, is mandatory. And it's not all unimportant. Don't get me wrong. And realizing that we're going to have to be some compromise. I'm not a yes on it, by the way. Just so people know, that's not to say I won't become one or I couldn't become one. But Senator Hoeven and I talk about it every couple of hours. We just stay in very close touch. He's an appropriator. I'm on armed services. We get all the classified briefings, and it's there's a high priority in all of this. But when you start adding, when the millions become billions. Before you get to trillions, there ends up being a lot of things in there that you just shouldn't have, and so it's just one of those packages that can become very large. The thing I will say is, at least we're working through it. I mean, we've been working up literally on the floor for 3 weeks. We've been intensely working on it for this week to the point where we are today. So you're exactly right, Scott, and it does cost a lot of money to compete with China because China prints money faster than we do, and they have a much more efficient system than we have. They don't have capitalism. They aren't required to, they don't need private equity because all the equity in China comes from the government, and it's all the same. So,
and if we're sending out stimulus checks for people that don't even know they're getting them and don't need them, why not say, whoa, hard stop here? Why don't we incentivize more job creation in North Dakota so these people don't need incentive checks or extension of unemployment benefits and put it into some sort of effort to take out China on the supply chain issue? That would be not only supported, right?
It's exactly the conversation Senator Hoeven and I have been having with our colleagues for the last 2-3 days. If you can assure us, if we can get assurances and get in language in the bill that this would come from money repurposed, there's at least $720 billion in this most recent $1.2 trillion package the Democrats passed along party lines that will be available on October 1st that won't be spent by the end of the fiscal year. We should start using that to repurposing that for things like the Endless Frontier Act, things like a large infrastructure package. And then you're going to get all kinds of bipartisan support. The problem is the president today is coming out with a new $6 trillion, with a T, trillion-dollar baseline budget. That's not stimulus. That's just the new baseline budget. That's a 40% increase in the annual spending of the United States of America in his budget. So that's what we're up against.
And that'd be bad in and of itself if it hadn't come on the heels of $6 trillion in COVID spending. $6 trillion, right? Which is not even all spent, but has been allocated and been part of the quote-unquote fix. And then how many trillion does he want to spend on infrastructure?
That's a good question, and that's we're right in the middle of that discussion too, right? So he's come down to $1.7 trillion. We are, as Republicans, at $928 billion. Our $928 billion is all paid for through the traditional infrastructure trust funds and appropriations, as well as repurposing some of the American Rescue Plan dollars. Again, no new money. He wants $1.7 trillion, and he wants to raise taxes to get it. So So we're at loggerheads. We're in the middle of the discussion, as I said. He wants to get this wrapped up by the end of this Memorial Day weekend. Ben Cardin and I are the lead Democrat and Republican on the Transportation and Infrastructure Subcommittee. The chairman is Tom Carper, and the ranking Republican is Shelley Moore Capito. Shelley is taking the lead on negotiating with the White House on it, and I suspect that her Memorial Day weekend is going to be spent in Washington.
Let's get some calls in here on the Talk Radio Town Hall for Senator Kramer. Don, question on the trucking tax. Go, Don.
Hey, Senator. I'm sorry, I just got done unloading here at Belva. Look, I'm really angry. I don't know who the brilliant person is in Senate or House that came up with another, let's tax the trucks again, and we'll put 25 cents a mile on every truck to help pay for the highway trust fund, I believe. I mean, I am so angry. That for me, that would be $30,000 more that I would have to pay. And I'm sick and tired. We busted our rear ends during COVID to keep everybody happy, to do what we could do to help out. And what do we get? Some brilliant person coming up with an idea to tax us again.
All right, let's give Senator Kramer a chance to answer that, because I'm up against the breakdown. Hang tight. Go ahead, Senator Kramer.
Yeah. So I'm not interested in raising any existing taxes. What I do think we ought to do, though, is broaden the Highway Trust Fund to include a vehicle miles tax so that electric vehicles and the vehicles that aren't buying gas or diesel are paying for their use of the same highway that you're using and have been paying for a long time. The president has stated emphatically he opposes any such thing. Isn't it ironic? He's got $160 billion in his package to incentivize electric vehicles, but he won't tax those electric vehicles for using the highway. So he wants to kill the taxpayer while he builds electric cars that a lot of people don't seem to want.
All right, Don, hang on. We'll finish on the other side of the break. If you have a follow-up, then Gabe, then Ruger, then Jay, on the student bankruptcy bill. Got a question on Biden's ATF appointee. Got a question about January 6th, which will be part of the things I believe you're voting on today, that commission. Yep. Stay tuned. More with Senator Kramer and your calls, questions, and comments coming up. Kevin Kramer's here. Senator Kramer, just to finish with Don on the trucking. I have a question, too, for you, Don. I remember hearing stories about the new way in which you'd be regulated as to your hours, and there were some things that even the Trump administration had trouble stopping the onslaught of additional regulation related to your hours and how you're monitored and all of it. Was it ELD or what was the new gizmo that we were doing, Don? How's that treating you these days?
Well, the ELD, I've got one in my truck. I put it in. It's my own truck, my own company. So I put one in, and it's working because, you know, we're able to, I do ag. So I get some ag exempt time and all that, but for me, the rules aren't hurting me nearly as bad as some of the over-the-road guys, but I'm telling you, the tax issue, I know it's a broken record, but this is out of control. There's so many guys that are dropping out of the industry because they're being taxed to death. And the trucks, you know, were my truck, 2 years ago, I bought it brand new. I ordered it, $172,000. And the doggone thing, tax alone, that 12% tax, that's 17 grand. That's supposed to go to the Highway Trust Fund. Where did it go? I mean, everybody keeps talking how bad the roads are. Don't go to Canada. You'll know what bad roads are like. But
Yeah, and I heard Joe Biden yesterday say, America's slipping. America's slipping. We have horrible infrastructure. What an inspirational message from old Joe. America's slipping, and this is terrible. Our infrastructure is horrible. It's terrible. No, the problem is how you spent the money. It isn't that you have not enough money. Forget that, Senator Kramer, but Dick Bell, would rest his soul, told me one day, he showed me an invoice for a truck, just like Don did, and he said, guess how much of this is the Obama tax? The environmental tax on us. Every time we buy something, that's supposed to go to the road. So you're saying these guys have been taxed enough is what I think I hear you saying, right, Senator?
So there are all these new vehicles on the road that don't pay any taxes. Now, Don's got a combination of issues. And what he's talking about right now is just the tax on the purchase of the truck and registering the truck. the real tax that the main tax that funds the Highway Trust Fund, of course, is the tax at the pump, the gas tax, as we'd like to call it. But in his case, it might be diesel or whatever fuel source you use. And that was set, I think the last time was 1996 or something like that. It's never been indexed. And it right now, I want to say, Scotty, it has something like, I'm going to just be close here, $230 billion in it. The demand for getting our roads up to, you know, getting them built, maintained adequately, you know, rebuilt, is much greater than that. So, and it's a, by the way, it's a shrinking pie, right? Because every truck you buy, every car you buy is more efficient than the last one. Now they have the hybrids. Now we're going to have electric vehicles. That means less money into the trust fund. And what I'm saying is, don't raise anybody's taxes. And Joe Biden has said that, by the way. And then certainly before you even talk about raising somebody's gas tax, we've got to start making the other people who aren't paying to use the roads paying to use the roads. You know, and so the left wants to go to fewer cars driving on the roads, more public transit, electric vehicles, but they still want to raise more money for highways. Well, you can't have it both ways. You've got to be a little more creative than that. That's why our bill, that we're now up to $928 billion that we've offered the president this week, it doesn't raise any taxes. It repurposes existing money. But I am very interested in a vehicle miles tax. I raised the issue at a hearing earlier this year with the governor of Michigan, and she stumbled and stammered and said, well, that's going to be a tough decision. Here she is testifying about how proud she is that they're building more and more electric vehicles in Michigan, but she didn't know how we were going to pay for new highways. So we've got to have an adult discussion about that.
But you're saying to Don and others, no new taxes on trucking. We spend the money we have, or spend the money that's unspent on fixing the roads and right-sizing this thing. And I think
and then broaden the tax, if anything.
Yeah. So, Don, keep fighting on this. Appreciate what you do. Honestly, we don't talk about truckers moving everything and being a thankless job and regulating your hours and all the extra taxes. And, I mean, it's just ridiculous, because without truckers,
Don,
we'd shut down our economy.
Before you get rid of Don, I know you want other people. His ELD comment was very interesting, Don. So you own your own truck. You bought the ELD. Because remember, I think it was like 2017 or 18, somewhere in there when this came into, being the mandate, the rule, and we couldn't get it stopped. But Don mentioned that he hauls a lot of ag, and we were able to get some relief and some exemptions and some waivers for agriculture, so that you didn't have the situation, particularly with live animals, for example, where you're 10 miles from your destination, you have to stop and let them out or something, and a lot of crazy stuff like that. But Don, it was interesting to hear your transition to where you are today.
Well, North Dakota has been very good to us with the truck.
Yes,
they're sticklers, but they're not outrageous like California, New York, places like that.
Well, and ELE's working for him, as he said, because he's got the ag exemption, but over the road guys don't have the ag exemption, so a lot of them are just saying, between higher taxes and this onerous regulation, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. I'm just done. Just throwing in the towel. Yeah. And we better worry about that. That's one of the reasons we have a lumber problem right now. Lumber's sitting in yards waiting to go to places, and they don't have enough trucks to get it there. It's just it's part of the supply chain thing. Appreciate the call, Don. I had a caller ask if North Dakota can stand out in this debate over the supply chain. I think what they mean is, do we have tools here other people don't? One I'd think of is the Bank of North Dakota. I mean, should we be using this in North Dakota as an opportunity to say, wait a minute here, Kevin's going to do something, John's going to do something, Kelly's going to do something on the federal level to move towards incentivizing using the dollars we have. And we have a Bank of North Dakota. Why don't we match that? I don't know. Do you think North Dakota's a leg up in this, can start saying, hey, we're the place to fix your supply chain woes?
Well, let me give you just one little example of that. Scott, we've always been in a good spot, and there's certain things in the supply chain, right? I mean, like, as I told Larry Kudlow, you don't get to eat your pasta in Manhattan unless the durum grower in North Dakota gets his durum to the elevator, and then to the mill, and then to the pasta factory, right? So we've always been an important part of lots of supply chains. Certainly energy is another area. But here's an area. We have a number of rare earth minerals in North Dakota that are part of our lignite process. So in our lignite coal is embedded certain rare earth minerals that go into a lot of the high-tech things that we're talking about, that to this point we're dependent on China for. Just one example, and there's various methods that innovators have come up with. In situ mining is one of them, and and you'll have to have somebody from EERC on to explain the rest, because I'm well over my head already. But yeah, North Dakota, as an innovative state with innovative people, entrepreneurial people who've always had to sort of fight a little harder than others to get stuff to market, sure we can be, but you keep raising the issue of the right incentives. And what that sounds like to a lot of people is, how can the government fund some of this stuff? And I don't know that the government necessarily has to fund it, but we can certainly provide regulatory relief, big issue. We can certainly provide, we've always provided a lot of R&D, early R&D, and I do think North Dakota's been pretty good at that, but through various funds, including, I suppose, the Bank of North Dakota, remembering the bank is a bank, it's not an equity partner, but it's a very valuable tool. Sure, we could try to incentivize even more entrepreneurship and innovation in our tech parks, on our research universities. I think we've done an okay job of that, and I think we've gotten a lot better at it recently. Maybe more could be done. I don't know. I'm not as familiar as I ought to be. But just give you one little example. I just had a breakfast a couple of weeks ago over at the home of the Chief of Naval Operations. That's the member of the Navy that's the four-star that sits on the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So he's one of the Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Gilday. And we talked about the fact that at North Dakota State University, they have a polymers and coatings program that does research and creates coatings for naval ships. It's really pretty remarkable. But I suspect a lot of the other places that do that are someplace in another country. So we've got the wherewithal to do it, Scotty. In terms of the tools, the financial tools and whatnot, we're trying to create some of those at the federal level to be joined by at the state level to maximize it.
All right, sure. Let's get back to the calls. We're going to go quick here. Give everybody short questions, short answers from Senator Cramer to get to everybody. Gabe, go ahead. Your question on the January 6th issue.
Yeah, I'm absolutely outraged and concerned right now about what's going on with individuals who are being currently held in federal custody who were involved in the events of January 6th. A number of these individuals are being denied access to their attorneys. They're being denied access to due process. And also, some of them have been severely physically abused by guards to the point of concussion, loss of eyesight in one gentleman. One individual had the skin on his wrist completely stripped off from zip ties that they were putting on him.
Wow, a lot there. Senator Cramer, what do we know about those already detained for January 6th, and what's happening right now related to a commission looking at it going forward?
Well, this is the first I've ever heard of any of these things, so I'd have to dig a little deeper, or provide me the source of that information so I could look into it. There have been about 450 roughly arrests at this point. Based on what the Department of Justice tells us in their investigations, they expect to maybe make another 100 arrests. Which is one of the main reasons why I don't think we need a January 6th commission. You've got the Justice Department doing hundreds of investigations, including prosecutorial investigations. All we could do with the commission at this point is get in their way. And generally, the DOJ doesn't let you get in their way. What they do is they hoard information and witnesses and testimony and evidence until they're done with it before they'll even turn it over to a commission. So, but with regard to all that, I don't know. And guards, I'd have to look at those individually. I wouldn't be shocked that there'd be a little bit of concern by some in law enforcement when you have a situation that killed a cop. You can probably expect to not be treated as well in a jail. So.
And Gabe, if you want to share some of the resources or the sources for those information, happy to pass them on to Senator Cramer. All right, we'll continue after this. Just saw a news flash here that the J.P. Morgan CEO is slamming the Biden proposed tax plan. And I think, wow, what is going on? These big bankers that you've been grilling before the banking committee that you have invited to North Dakota, there's been a sea change in their attitude lately. What's going on?
Well, I think, first of all, J.P. Morgan Chase is headed by Jamie Dimon, and he is by far the most colorful of the large bank CEOs. He's also the wealthiest, He's very plain spoken. So he's actually been pretty good. He really has. And my discussion with him was fantastic, actually. And he's opening a couple of banks in North Dakota, or bank branches. But he was really blunt the other day. I think here's what happened. The other day when we had the six large CEOs in front of the banking committee, as you know, I spent a month preparing for them, meeting with them individually. I think they got an earful, and they found out that, you know what, Elizabeth Warren is never going to be our friend. Sherry Brown's never going to be our friend. They hate anybody that makes a profit. They hate any shareholder that gets paid a dividend. These banks have done everything we asked them to do over the course of the last year and a half with regard to PPP and all the other good things that they did to keep our economy going. And there's almost nobody being denied a loan that should be getting one that I ever hear of. But at the same time, they've become very woke, as you know, and they've categorically excluded in their what are called ESG reports. You know, they have these policies, environmental, social, governance reports. And the problem is, Scotty, that the only people screaming in their ear are the left until this week. And this week they heard about capitalism from Pat Toomey, the chairman of the banking committee. They heard about firearms from me. They heard about coal from John Kennedy. They heard about oil and gas from, you know, other members, Cynthia Lummis, a member of the banking committee, and they were held to account for their statements and were reminded that that capitalism is what makes banking great and banking is what makes capitalism great, and don't forget, philosophy matters. So I think there's been a little bit of an awakening, if you will.
All right, rapid fire to get through the rest of the comments as best we can. Emailer sent a note yesterday saying, please ask Senator Kramer about the immigrant delivery to Fargo. Were these people checked for COVID? What do you know about that?
Well, I think if I understand it properly, and we check on a regular basis anymore about all these rumors about people coming in, I think there was a refugee settlement recently in Fargo, which is different than, you know, illegal immigrants being dropped off. Although I will submit to you that one of the biggest problems we have in our immigration system right now is the asylum standard is not being applied at the border. And the human traffickers are training the people that they're moving how to get asylum. They're coming from places that they don't even meet the criteria for asylum. We don't have time to go into all those details. But my understanding of the Fargo situation is that was a legal, transparent refugee settlement issue. But beyond that, we follow up on every other rumor that we hear.
Yeah, there was one about Dickinson a while ago, completely not true, 100% not true. We tracked it down, too, with the airport folks, that it never happened. So beware of rumors in this, too. But don't be afraid to say, hey, is this real or is it not? Because we forward that on.
Not only that, Scotty, you're exactly right. It's really important that people police their communities, because just because DHS or some Biden-appointed ICE person tells me, oh, no, that's not happening. That only means we don't know.
let's quickly go through the rest of these here. About 15 seconds for each question, each answer. Grant, Bismarck, go, quickly.
Okay, what is our collateral if the United States goes bankrupt? And what will happen to the dollar? And, I mean, you just don't go bankrupt and you don't give something up. What do we got a plan for? Or would you have something else in mind?
It's a fair question with all the constant bailouts going on, right? And the trillions being thrown around.
With all the liquidation, all the liquidity being thrown into the economy. This is why a $6 trillion budget, when you only have a couple trillion dollars of revenue, can't work. We are heading for hyperinflation if we don't stop this nonsense. And hyperinflation will no doubt lead to higher interest rates. And on top of that, the Biden administration wants to raise taxes. It's the trifecta of disaster for an economy. With regard to the specific question about collateral, the biggest holder of federal debt, of course, is the Social Security Trust Fund, ironically. So it's ourselves. And the Federal Reserve itself has been continues to buy bonds and things, which adds to the declining value of the dollar. Back to the caller's point there, I think I think that's what he's getting at. It's a big problem. And he's on top of that, China would love nothing more than to replace the dollar, right? Start watching the cryptocurrencies, and there's all kinds of potential threats out there to replace the dollar as the international currency that stabilizes the world's economy. So we've got a lot of challenges. I've got more questions like that than I have answers, because I'm not the expert by a long shot. I'm the Sonny Bono of judiciary on the banking committee.
And Ruger had a question about Biden's ATF appointee. That's somebody you can support?
Oh, crazy. No. It's the worst case scenario you could imagine. You talk about Fox in the hen house, Chipman, it's just awful. And he didn't do very well at his hearing. I don't know if you saw it. I'm not on that committee, but he was held to account for sure. But I imagine that they'll push him through with 50.
Eric, that's why I want to make sure we get you in here to ask Senator Kramer a question as we
Senator
honor
Kramer,
both.
Senator Kramer, first of all, folks, please remember our war dead on Memorial Day, and yeah. Also check out the link on the flag to help the Lucas Schmitz homes for our troops. Question, what is the status of the toxic bill about Blue Water, Gulf War Syndrome, and the burn pits? And as far as my second quick question, I don't know who Joe Biden consulted with to pick 9/11 as the date to leave Afghanistan, but as you know, on the Armed Forces Committee, or if you check with anybody, that our enemy likes to attack on that holiday. All the time I was in the field, we had to prepare for attacks on 9/11. Benghazi happened on 9/11. And it seems to me that no one has addressed this, that it hands a psychological and inspirational victory to our enemies. They could have picked any other day than 9/11.
Well, Eric, first of all, thanks for the question. Thanks for your service. With regard to the toxic issue that Eric's asking about, Scotty, that we just passed that bill out of committee. You know, I want to say it was last week, but it might have been this week. I think it was this week, actually, now that I think about it. We've had so many committees, so much committee work this week. We passed it out, as I recall. I think it was even passed out unanimously with some conditions, and that before it gets to the floor, we do have to work on it a little bit. We need to get a CBO score, because one of the unintended consequences sometimes of expanding the eligibility for benefits is that you create a much, much greater backlog. If the eligibility for benefits for, say, a common illness that may not have been caused by whatever it was you're exposed to, and you can use burn pits as probably the best example. So there's a little bit of work that the VA needs to do to provide some more information to us, but we did pass it out of committee so that we could continue progressing it forward. We don't have any idea whether it's a $50 billion or $1 trillion cost to it, so we still need to get that part of it done. But anyway, it's got universal support in principle, and that's why it passed out. With regard to September 11th, Eric, I'd never thought about that. You're exactly right. That date and other dates, of course, are days that the enemy likes to attack, particularly terrorists. They're very clever that way, and it is inspirational to their tribes. So I suspect Joe Biden was just trying to be a little cute by setting that date, and we can have all the discussion all day long and arguments about and debate about whether we should even be withdrawing from Afghanistan, what the consequences of that might be. I will tell you, I just received a classified briefing here about, I guess it was last week, on the withdrawal and how some of it's going already. And, you know, there's already been an attack on a women's school where I think it was 85 girls were killed. So anyway, and how we treat our friends, and there are really good people that with differing views on whether we should even withdraw or how we should withdraw from Afghanistan. But you are exactly right about the date. That was just him trying to be too clever. Somebody should have
too clever is being pretty kind. I think it's disgusting.
I think it's very political, and I wish some of our other leaders could have gotten involved with that, because if you ask Dan Crenshaw or Senator Cotton or any of these people that have been in, they know what that inspiration, and they hold on to it. I mean, they build religious buildings on places that they conquered as far as our fanatic enemies. So,
great point, Eric. Appreciate the call. God bless you for your service. Senator Kramer, last question from a texter. How do you propose to collect data for a per-mile tax?
Well, therein lies the big rub, right? Because that means you'd have to have... there's a couple ways you could do it. And there, by the way, there have been some pilot programs in states where, that states have done, because several states have applied this. And the way I, you could do it in honor system, you could do it with GPS, obviously. I mean, any reasonably new built car has that capacity already. Or you could have an estimated... you know, an estimated miles based on where you live. You can make it regional. You could be I think we ought to have a national pilot program so that we could do this across the nation in all the various geographies and cultures. One of the things that some of the opponents of the idea have said is, well, that would be disproportionately harmful to places like North Dakota because of the several miles we drive, to which I say, same thing applies to the gas tax. Exact same thing. We make the decision what kind of a car we want to drive and what mileage we get and what our needs are and how often we're going to drive and where we're going to drive. The same principle applies to whether it's a gas tax or the vehicle miles tax. But some people don't want to give up that kind of data, right? And all I can say is I got news for you. It's when you take your car in for repairs, the mechanic can look at, you know, how far you've driven, where you've driven, or whatever else they want, I suspect, on those computers. So,
well, I guess the big question is, what's the fairest way to make sure we have the best infrastructure in the world? And if this is a tax, and it's the way to do this and do it right, great. If it's one more tax, I'm with everybody else. Come on, give me a break. Spend the money you already have well, right? You know, it's amazing how it just continues to be this tax, a trucker tax. We're going to tax you when you buy the truck. We're going to tax you with the mileage on the fuel, and we're going to get you another way. You know, I mean, but it seems to me you've found a fair way to do it.
No, if you were burning diesel, you wouldn't use a vehicle mile tax. Or you could do it just straight vehicle mile tax, and then you'd have an incentive. You have all the incentives that are built into this, right? But you're exactly right. What you don't want to do is say, okay, on top of all your other taxes, we're going to add this one. That would be exactly the wrong direction. You just get more people paying the tax, and it doesn't have to be as high. The thing about trucks, I mean, really, trucks are why we have highways, right? That is why we build them. And the highway system has always been funded by a user fee. That's what the fuel tax is. There's some other user fees as well, but the main one is just the fuel tax. So we just have to find a way to do it in a fair manner, Scott. You're exactly right. Not by increasing the burden on the same people.
You will be part of history on Monday in Williston, where the first memorial for a tomb of the unknown soldier was erected in 1919, and the good people of Williston have decided that it is time to give that a new coat of paint and get that looking just like it did in 1919. But tell us about your plans for Memorial Day.
Yeah, it's so sweet, Scotty. So I was invited by Ken Callahan, my good friend. I think you probably know Ken. He's active up in Williston, works with MDU, works for MDU.
Can't believe there's anybody that doesn't know Ken, but yes, you're right.
Yeah, it's about right, isn't it? He has an accent like Bernie Sanders, but he lives in Williston. It's a beautiful thing. But so he invited me to come up and keynote this Memorial Day rededication of this memorial to the unknown. And it was so great about that. To your point, I had no idea. In fact, this is sort of inside baseball, Scott, but I think your listeners might appreciate this. There's a CNN reporter that covers Capitol Hill by the name of Lauren Fox. Lauren's dad lives in Williston. She lived in Williston before she came out here. And so Lauren and I talk a lot. And so yesterday I was coming out of the chambers, and her and the gaggle grabbed me and said, what's up? When are we going to get to the vote? All this stuff. This was late in the night, but not yet morning, right? And I said, hey, Lauren, I'm going to Williston. And then right away she gets very engaged. So I told her the story. I said, did you know that the very first, at least the one first documented, memorial to an unknown soldier is in Williston, and it's 102 years old, and I get to go up and rededicate it, so it's pretty cool.
Well, thanks for doing that. Thanks for remembering what Memorial Day weekend is all about, and appreciate that. And we're going to now get into a chance to let our listeners remember somebody they've lost that gave their life serving this country, too. So thanks a bunch. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
And while we're talking in this week, Scott, I think it's important to note that there's one person who was willing to give it all, and a lot of the people around him gave it all. And you know him well, and I know him well, and we love him to death. And I gave a 100th birthday speech for Lynn Oz yesterday on the floor of the United States Senate. It was just a great pleasure. So it's Lynn's birthday this week, and he turns 100 years old. Battle of the Bulge is where it all began, his service in World War II.
They're having a big celebration for him next Saturday in Minot, so be there or be square. 100 great years of Lynn Oz. Thanks for remembering that, too, Senator. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Senator Kevin Cramer, let him get back to the Senate floor.